Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry to help you do church better. I'm your co-host, John Ronaldo, and I'm here alongside Chris Wesley. Chris, how's it going today, man?
I'm feeling very Catholic right now. How about you?
Very Catholic. Why are you feeling very Catholic? Did you just go to a soup supper or something?
Yeah, I just went to a soup supper, you jerk. No, I mean, you know, it's Lent, and you know, it's a time where we can just be rejoicing that we're Christians and Catholics. I'm being somewhat facetious, but it's all about our topic today, because I think this is something that you and I are passionate about. In fact, I've seen you do this a couple times on social media, especially Twitter. But it's when we try to out-Catholic one another, or when we try to out-Christian one another. So I'm feeling very Catholic right now, which I think is a statement where it's some of us feel that, but we're not sure what it means, or
you're just trying to out-Catholic me right now, right? That way it is.
There's the two approaches, and this is the thing that I always loved, are when people out-Catholic or out-Christian each other, they either take the whole like holier than thou or I'm more humble than you approach, right? It's like, I'm the holier than thou because I went to mass. I go to daily mass. I do the rosary. I fast every Friday. And so forth. Or there's the, I'm just not worthy of God. You know, I'm just not worthy of this church. You are so great, sort of thing, where it's like the opposite pride, you know, and
false humility.
Right. And that's why I always love that definition from C.S. Lewis, where it's, humility isn't thinking less of oneself, it's thinking of yourself less, right? And I know I was paraphrasing it there, and someone who's more Catholic than me is going to be like, no, that's not exactly how it said. But so hold back there, Pharisee. But anyway, it's just, I think it's so true where we, what does it truly mean to be a Christian? What does it truly mean to be Catholic and not come off judgmental? And I think that's a huge issue in the local church, in the universal church as well, but especially in the local church. And I sometimes believe that that's probably our biggest issue as to why people don't come back to church, or why people don't further engage in the mass or the sacraments or parish life.
We're a large and diverse church, and we have lots of different expressions of way of doing things. And you know, some of them are kind of right in line with church teaching, and sometimes maybe it's not, you know. But there is a sense of like you have to do it this way, or you have to do it that way, that, or you have to be like this, or have to be like that. That's really, for me, it's frustrating to watch, because, and I know I've done it too. That's the thing, you know, that judgment that's out there, because it's almost like there isn't room in this church for a diversity of expressions of faith or a diversity of perspectives, knowing that we're all on a journey, you know, with Christ, and trying to figure this thing out, right?
Right.
You know, it's like church, maybe this is controversial. It's like, but church is not black and white, and we want to make everything black and white. And man, there are just so many shades of gray that.
Oof. Maybe we should edit that out, but no, go ahead.
It's just not as easy as we want it to seem. And I think what happens is that we kind of show that in the way that we connect on social media, or even, you know, the way that we look at the person who walked in late at church,
right?
You know,
right.
And who's walking in late? You know, we turn our heads. It's like, oh, they're walking in late, you know, today. We're like that. And I know that I'm making that conversation up in my head, but that's the way sometimes people feel. That's the way sometimes I feel it. And I just think, as ministry leaders, we need to be sensitive to, to how we portray ourselves and how we portray our church, because sometimes we portray the church with an ugly light.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I agree on that. I definitely agree on that. I think, and it's not just Catholics, people who go to church with newcomers who are unchurched. It's we do it with other people who are just as Catholic as we are. I mean, just to use that as an example, where it's funny how it comes in all just different shapes and forms, from like how you worship at Mass. Like, are you judging how other people are worshiping at Mass? Like, are they, prostrate enough, like during their prayers, or, is it, are they just disconnected to even, the size of families? It's like, I only have two kids. But then there are all these families that have 6, 7, 8 kids. And sometimes I'm just like, are they trying to say that they're more Catholic than me? Because, there's just more kids out there, and I won't go down that path a little bit more, but it's just funny how we create these different bars of what is absolutely Catholic and what is, not like even close, what's not holy and everything. And I think the place where we have to look at that first is in our church leadership. And I don't mean the Pope. He's fine. I think he's good. I think it gets disconnected along the well. What? Like,
no,
you guys can't watch what John and I are how we're reacting. John kind of gave a look, let me call the Pope out here because I'm holier than him. Go ahead.
I'm not going to call the Pope.
Go out. Ahead, Pope John Ronaldo.
No. Come I'm just on. Kidding. But I think, you say that the Pope's fine, but I guarantee you that there are people that, Pope is criticized left and right all the time
about
what he's doing, how he's operating. Now that's just part of being in leadership as well, So I understand that, But there are folks who think the Pope's not Catholic or not Catholic enough, right? There are people that think our pastor or our priest or our youth ministry leader or whatever are not Catholic enough. Whatever that means. I mean, what does that even mean? And it's not to say that, there isn't a truth that the church teaches. The church absolutely teaches truth. It's centuries worth of dialogue and intellectual conversations and writings and thinking and prayer that brings the church to that truth. And I am so much in favor of the truth that the church brings forward. But at the cost of what, right? Do we bang that truth over people's head, saying you must live this truth, and then what does that do? That's what I feel like we're doing sometimes as church.
Well, and I agree. But I think where, again, it needs to start is with how leadership, how we, those who are employed by the church, maybe I'll rephrase it that way. Those of us who are employed by the church, whether we're a pastor or a youth minister, we have to be in constant check of how we're projecting ourselves to others. Because you're right, we can't control what the critics are going to think. There are, like you said, people who criticize the Pope. But like, what I can control is what I'm projecting out to the world. And so the first thing I know as someone who's worked in the church is that I've got to think about, is it all about me? Or am I really making this about God? Am I making this all about me and what works for me, or am I really doing what God is calling me to do? Sometimes that's 100% clear, and sometimes it's as muddy as it can get, And I think what's really important for us as leaders is to constantly have that discernment and that check. And one thing that I think I write maybe too much about on my blog is having accountability, having men and women that surround you, that wise counsel that can keep you in check, that can allow you to say like, hey, John, you're coming off a little too, a little too heady with the way that you're talking about this subject. You're totally disconnecting to people. Or, you really should have spent a couple more minutes talking to that woman on the phone, about the crisis that she's going to. And I think, for us, discerning when we're making it about ourselves and when we're making it about God is huge. And we need that accountability to feed into us in that regards. And if we can do that, I think that will give us a huge foundation into making sure that we don't come off uber Catholic or over Catholic or too Catholic for people to enjoy the church.
Yeah. And I think, I think we have to be really careful about the language that we choose for this particular topic, right? Because, uber Catholic. Well, there's nothing wrong with being uber Catholic. That's not it. It is how your Catholicism or your Christianity is perceived by others. That's what it really, for me, that's a part of this. It's like, we can control what we say and what we do, but we cannot control other people's perceptions of what we say and what we do. And so there is always the intent that John Rinaldo had in communicating this. The intent was not to be judgmental, but it was perceived as judgmental, which has happened many times in my life, you know, where I had pure motives, but it wasn't effective, right?
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, fair enough. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, how do we not become the Pharisees, right? How do we not become the people that Jesus was saying, like, you brood of, you know, like, you whitewash tombstones, you know, the people that John the Baptist were calling out, you know, how do we, because I think, right, where we might have good intentions in our heart and think like we're doing God's work, how can we break that mold? Accountability is definitely one of those things. You mentioned this too. It's with the wording that we're using. And I think communication is key in this, that sometimes we tend to use the wrong words because, again, it goes back to me. I was listening to a podcast of with Tim Ferriss. He's the author of The 4-Hour Workweek, and I actually love that book. And he was in a podcast interview talking about when he first wrote that book, he hated the first 4 or 5 chapters he wrote in the first draft because they came off way too heady. And it's because he was using 3-syllable words where one syllable words would be good. You know, he was using terms that he had like adopted through these higher education communities that he had been a part of, when really what he needed to do was write the book for his friends. And I think for us in church world, you know, we get so attached to these terms and these buzzwords like the new evangelization, missionary disciples, you know, and those are good words that have a lot of depth and meaning into them. But if I have no clue what that means, if I'm not familiar with church world, that's going to come off as a foreign subject to me. That's not going to seem attractive. And, you know, we see that in the letters that Paul wrote to all the different churches, is he uses their language. He became a missionary in those areas and understood and was able to use those different examples. Jesus does this, of course, through his parables and, you know, talking the language of the people. And I think for us in church world, you know, even though we have a beautiful language in our Catholicism, in the catechism, sometimes we have to think about, how are we translating this so that other people understand? For sure.
Well, okay, so agreed. And I can see somebody saying, and I thought it, so I'll just say it. It's like, so are we dumbing down the faith? You know, is it dumbing down the faith by choosing to use 1-syllable words versus 3-syllable words?
See, that's a pompous reaction. See? So okay. That's like, that's my reaction to that. Like every time I hear that, I'm like, dumbing down the faith. So you're going to talk to a 2-year-old with like, you know, why do we have kids Bibles then? You know, it's like, just give them the NAB and like say, read the New American Bible. Like, no, like it's, we do that in every aspect of life, like dumb it down. It's creating steps, rungs in the ladder to help people get to that point.
Good. You know? But see, that's why I want to articulate it, because I know people are going to say that, and I can say it as well, because again, I love what the church teaches. I love the truth that the church teaches. And so I want to give that to people. I want to encourage that when they're ready, you know, when they're in a space to do that. But I want to do it in a way, what you're saying is we got to do it in a way that people can take it, can accept it, and kind of bring it in. And I agree with that. And so I only bring up the question to say that tension is real though, because the faith is rich. I don't want to dumb it down.
Right.
But at the same time, we have to do it in ways that people are going to take it in.
Well, and I think there's not a problem with dumbing down things as long as you don't leave it there. Mm. And I think that's the important part. Like, you know, if to use our kids as an example, right? You know, I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. And if I just read to them the kids' Bible that we have every single night until they're 18 and never introduce them to a youth Bible or to a regular Bible, then that's just staying in that area and dumbing it down. So all that they remember is that people were smiling on the ark when the great flood came and washed out the world, you know? So like, so I think it's important to know your audience and to figure out different ways to reach your audience with the language that they're going to understand, but then provide them those rungs to go deeper. You know, I always crack up when I go to youth conferences and these speakers are quoting St. Augustine and, you know, just, you know, Thomas More and all these just great theologians. And I'm like, I don't know if the teens understand that. I don't know if the teens understand that analogy or that understanding, like let's kind of get into their world and do that. And I think going back to, you know, when we as Catholics become judgmental towards others, it's this this bias that we have of saying, I don't understand why you don't get it like I do. Mm-hmm. And instead of me changing so that I can help you, I'm expecting you to do that on your own. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we see that in church behavior. Like you mentioned the whole looking over the shoulder, like, you know, when people walk in, it's kind of like that. I mean, for me, it's because I'm a total ENFP in the Myers-Briggs. And so it's like squirrel, 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 you know, like it doesn't have to be people late. But for people who are coming in late and that feel that judgmental, or if you're doing that because you're like, oh, that person's late, it's because you're expecting them to have the same exact value system as you. Mm-hmm. And instead of saying like, asking the question of like, hey, I noticed you were late. Like, is everything okay? You're like, hey, I noticed that you're late and that's rude because you disturbed my time in church. Mm. Because, you know, if you think about it, and again, you and I know this because of our season of life, the adventure of getting kids dressed appropriately, fed, in the car, out of the car, into the pews, and engaged for an hour is going to be like, it's exhausting. Like after that, it's like, all right, where's our week-long vacation, you know? And
I skip a step. I just don't feed them. I just that's how we get to church on time.
You know, isn't it the worst when you get to church and you have like your kid kit and you're like, oh my gosh, we don't have the goldfish or the Cheerios, or like we don't have the little book, or you know, like what are we gonna do? Like
yeah.
I hate the, you know, you have those moments, but then you're kind of like, you feel judgmental because you see the one I won't say uber Catholic, but you have the one family where they have, you know, and this is maybe my heart issue, but they have the 7 or 8 kids who are all sitting perfectly, dressed perfectly. And my 2 kids, I can't handle 2 kids. I don't know how they handle 8 kids, but it's like, well, the 2 kids.
You're not a good parent. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
But you know what? I'm okay with that. I tell people all the time, I'm a horrible parent. You know, I'm just too selfish. Like I'm a father biologically. Yeah, I'm working on being a dad, you know? Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it comes back to the fact of where we have to check our hearts.
So let's agree 100%. I want to change the lens here a little bit, because I also want to talk about how when you get to Catholics who kind of go at each other, you know?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, because I think that's happening too. And again, now I'm speaking, you know, into the social media world too, because you know, there are certain social media tools, especially the ones that are open to more public, like Twitter and whatnot, where you see someone say something about whatever, a Bible reading or a church teaching or whatever like that. And then someone retweets it with their own quote saying, well, not quite, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I understand the intention behind saying, well, not quite, because there is a correctiveness or there's a truth that you want to share in that. I understand that that's the intention, but it doesn't come off that way. And right. I follow a lot of people and I see a lot of retweets and likes and all sorts of things from people. And I see it time and time again, where you get these Catholic leaders who really are at odds with each other because of their worldview or their theology or whatever. And although it's under the guise of I want to share the truth and I think this person is misrepresenting the truth, that's never how it's perceived, at least in my way, because there is, and maybe it's just the way I'm reading the tweet, for instance, but there is this tone of arrogance. There is this tone of like, he's wrong and I'm right and you need to think the way I think to be right. So therefore, if you follow this person, you know, and you think the way that you think, you are also wrong. Again, now I'm reading into their tweet a lot more, but again, it's about communication is what the listener does, okay? So right. In social media, communication is what the reader does,
right?
How it's perceived, you know? And what happens is that it just looks ugly. And so somebody who sees this interaction and sees these two Catholic leaders going at it, quote unquote, you know, at least that's how perceived. What a huge turnoff.
Right.
Huge turnoff to the church. It's like, that does not make me want to be involved in church. That does not make me want to be Catholic. And if that's what it means to be a follower of Christ, I don't want to be a follower of Christ. And that's where I get worried, because again, I always talk about social media is certainly a primary means for evangelization. And it can do good, and it could do a lot of bad as well.
Yeah, yeah. And what you're saying reminds me of the Gandhi quote where he says, I like your Christ, but I don't like your Christians. You know, and it's, how are we really representing Christ? How are we really showing that? And, you know, even you and I, we've got to be careful on this podcast, because there's a lot of emotion into this. And
what are you talking about?
And for what people don't know behind the scenes, like we were going to actually talk about something else for this recording, and we just started getting passionate about this subject, and I'm like, let's hit record. There's no consequences in that. I mean, granted, I'll listen to this before we air it, and maybe I'll be like, John, this was a really bad mistake. But, you know, I think what we're getting at is the fact that, you know, in a day and age where church attendance is shrinking, where people are not coming back to the faith, we really have to be careful with what we project out there. And so many times I think we're worried about projecting our weaknesses, like our sins, like, you know, whether it's I struggle with food or pornography or anger or, you know, whatever, that people are going to be like, oh, I don't want to associate with that. Where I think if people kind of saw the brokenness that we have, they'd be like feeling solidarity and knowing the fact that, okay, a church is made up of imperfect people, and they're okay with the fact that they're broken, but they've got hope because they know where the healing is coming from. And so many times where we use platforms like the pulpit, social media, our programs to project this ideal, I think we really have to be cognizant of what you said, like who is the listener, who is the reader, and how could I read these things and how could I listen to these things? And I mean, we kind of talked about this when we addressed email and social media. But one of the things that electronic media communications or print media lacks that, you know, face-to-face or live communication owns is tone. And if people can't hear your heart through what you're saying or writing, then you really have to like re-edit it or not communicate it at all. Sometimes it's best not to communicate anything than it is to communicate the wrong thing. And so for those of us in church world, whether you're an employee, clergy, or just a parishioner, you have to like really look at not just what you're saying, but how you're behaving at the same time. And I think that's challenging. So, you know, just going back to those practical steps, I think it's surrounding yourself with accountability where you can allow people to just really point out you know, what is going on in your life, and you're going to welcome that and listen to that and be like, you know what, you're right. I was being a little arrogant there. Or you know what, you're right. Those words I used could come off a little closed-minded. I've really got to address the way that I communicate. I think a third thing is spending time, or maybe not spending time, but definitely listening to those who are different from us.
Yeah.
Like challenging ourselves to step a little bit outside of our comfort zones, get into that mission field, you know, get into our parish community and meet people who, you know, live a little differently, speak a little differently, talk a little differently. You know, you're not going to turn into a sinner, you know, by, you know, eating, having a meal with someone who's not Christian. You're not going to go to hell because you have a friend or a neighbor who doesn't believe in God. But it does present a challenge of like, okay, how can I love this person regardless of what they believe? How can I love them like God loves me, mm-hmm. despite what they do?
Yeah, I agree, because I think we need to challenge our worldviews. We need to surround ourselves with people who do think differently than us, because that gives us more experience and insight into the world in general. And again, going back to this idea that, you know, this world is not black and white, and there are lots of different ways of looking at things and seeing things and perceiving things. And what I'm afraid of, quite honestly, is that we as church are losing our any ability to be tolerant of other ways of thinking and being. And I worry about that, because that's not positive. That's not a right. positive thing. That's a huge turnoff. And we spend all this energy talking about discipleship and evangelization and processes around it, and missionary work and accompaniment and stuff like that. You know, all these buzzwords, which are good buzzwords, which are awesome buzzwords, you know. But the moment that we're not tolerant, the more that we just start judging people, we're not that. We're not a company. We're not doing missionary discipleship. We're not evangelizing it. And so for me, what I have to do, just to add to your practical steps, is look, I have to read and reread and reread some of my tweets. Now, if you go back and look at my Twitter feed, yes, there are times I look like an arrogant fool. And call me out. I'd love for you. No, maybe I shouldn't say that. Retweet it and show us like, look, John, you do it too. I said, yeah, I probably do. Absolutely. You know, but I very, there are tweets that I've tweeted and then I've deleted because I realized 10 seconds later, I was like, oh no, that didn't come off well at all. Right. You know, so read, reread, reread, because again, you don't have the power of tone and facial expressions when you do social media. And the other practical step for me is, and I have to do this way better too, is like, I've got to be more steeped in prayer. I've got to be more steeped in my relationship with God, because it is God who is going to, certainly the community does too, but God who is going to reveal my sin, my weakness, and help me become better. Like if there's one thing I need to work on during this particular Lenten season, is like, God, reveal me to me.
Yeah.
Help me become a better version of me, using Matthew Kelly's language. You know, help me become more like you. I don't ask God that question enough, or I don't tell God that's what I need enough. And that's where my prayer life comes into play. And that's where I need help.
I agree. No, but I'm just joking with you there. But John, you're a total humble guy, and you're being a little hard on yourself. But no, I mean, I think you bring up a great point that we do have to. We do have to look at like what we're communicating, and I like that reread and read and reread and re-reread. You know, and I think it's important. You know, so many times we want to communicate on impulse. Yeah. And while I have no problem with communicating with emotion, I think emotion is beautiful when it comes out in the written language, and when it's beautiful when it comes out in the speech, it shouldn't be impulsive. It shouldn't be reactionary. Even those who are like deep in prayer life and you know, embracing scripture and memorizing it, I think one of the most important things we can do in communicating is listen first, and not just listen to the other people and what they're saying, but listen to what we're saying in our hearts before we decide what we're going to communicate out there. Mm-hmm. So passion is definitely important. We're not telling people to back down from their causes or from their beliefs by any mean. But it's also taking into consideration how the listener, how the person you're communicating to is going to respond to that. And that's even what I would say too, is when you're communicating this stuff, who are you trying to communicate that to? Who are you trying to say what you want to say to? Because if you can picture that person in your mind, then it is going to come off much more effective than if you're just putting something out there to be heard. It's not about being heard. It's about making sure that the target audience that you want to impact is going to hear what you're going to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you're being too strategic there, Chris. But no, I agree 100%. I think we just need to look at our motives around why we're doing, why we're saying, why we're acting the way that we're acting, you know. And is it that false humility? Is that better than now? Or is it truly coming from a heart like, I want to share truth. I want to speak that truth and speak of Jesus. I want to show the face of Jesus to the world. And I think ultimately that's a huge responsibility that we have as ministry leaders. It's like, I want people to know Christ through who I am, through my interactions, through my tweets,
right.
You know, through how I live my life.
Right.
And there are times I do that well, and there are times I don't do that well. And that's true for all of us, but I just, we need to explore the motives of why we say what we say or why we do what we do. So that we bring other people to Christ.
Definitely, definitely. So, John, if people want to call you out on Twitter, where can they find you?
At Chris R. Wesley. No, I'm at John Ronaldo. I make no bones. Twitter is certainly one of my favorite social media tools. And so that's definitely the one I use most often, you know, and that's why I see a lot of stuff on there. And I think that's, you know, Twitter is what kind of created this conversation for me today. My passion and energy, because I've just seen a lot of it lately and it's rubbing me the wrong way. So at John Ronaldo is where I'm at. And hopefully you see the face of Christ through my tweets. You may not all the time though. I understand.
You know, it's funny, and definitely something we did talk about with social media. It's the algorithms too, where we really have to be careful about these algorithms that are on Facebook and Twitter are just perpetuating some of those tweets that kind of drive us crazy at times. But this is a good subject. And again, we're here to help you guys, not to judge you guys on how you're doing church. That's why we're talking all things ministry. So if people want to get in touch with John, they can always do that. John at John Ronaldo on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's John M. Ronaldo. Don't forget that middle name. And his website is johnronaldo.com.
Yes, sir.
With me, it's Chris R. Wesley for Twitter and Instagram, and Marathon Youth Ministry for Facebook and marathonyouthministry.com. If you've got questions, if there are things you want to talk about on the podcast, email them to us at questions@thechurchpodcast.org. And you can always download past episodes on iTunes or go to our website, thechurchpodcast.org. And we would love to hear your thoughts. We'd love to hear your reviews. So don't be afraid to leave a review on iTunes and share us with all your friends, your families, even those Catholics that or non-Catholics that you judge. We would love just to to help them out. But anyway, we're so thankful and glad that you guys are a part of this community.
Yes.
John, thank you so much for sharing your passion with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Absolutely. My pleasure.
We love you all. Take care and see you next time.